WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, tales of entrepreneurship from central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. This week's guest on the Venture Forum is Scott Graves, founder of SM Graves Associates, which designs and implements business plans with a focus on nuts and bolts economic development. Scott aims to build initiatives that respond to regional needs, targeted to creating a strong sense of place. So he's currently working a lot in the incubator, makerspace, and media markets. Scott is very active with The Workshop, a makerspace and business incubator that just relocated to Rochdale. Makers are a really exciting area of economic development, I think, and it'll be fun to dig into that. Scott, it is great to have you here on the Venture Forum.
It is a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mark.
So I gave the listeners a glimpse of your background and career, but can you dig in more to what led you to create SM Graves and Associates and what you're up to now?
Yeah, the bulk of my substantive adult professional career, as they say, was taken up in the fine and performing arts. I was a touring musician. I was an educator, music educator, and an entrepreneur within that space, namely in compact disc manufacturing and in artist talent, working with talent in a variety of different ways, mainly in music. How that led me to business maker spaces, incubators, and whatnot is really in seeing the country in a relatively unique way, comparatively to most folks that may see parts of the country more as a tourist. We got to see both the good and the bad of modern economics, really, you know, and met people for more than a decade. And it led to some beliefs in, as my intro put, a strong sense of place, and then sort of reconsiderations about how we create our economy and maybe some substantive changes we can make that work better for more people, a wider array of people. And so in the last 5 years, that's really led almost entirely to a focus on creating, when I say nuts and bolts economic development, I mean getting away from the sort of concept of the top-down approach of the ribbon-cutting phenomenon, we like to call it around the office. Putting lots of money into physical spaces or physical things, and almost entirely, if not entirely, lacking in the areas of, say, programming. I know the word is generic, but I think you know what I mean, and I'm happy to explain more. But getting down to how we help people create better economic opportunity across a wider and more diverse range of businesses.
And some of it can be just very simple, right? It's not rocket science.
Oh, extremely, extremely simple. In fact, because we are the kind of culture that we are that is so heavily technology-based, there's a lot of times it's okay to be in love with the concept of the machine, right? But because we're so technology-based, we sometimes forget about very, very simple things. They might be relationship-based. They could be physical infrastructure-based. But the point there being, we've lost our way in certain respects to how very simple it can be to run business and the various sizes of business and the importance of resiliency. I know that word gets kicked around a lot now, but resiliency really means, to me, various forms of risk mitigation where you spread out risk, right? You can do that through the financial planning of a business, but you also do it just by supporting in a variety of ways various types of business, various sizes of business, and in general, creating different economic opportunities, not just for the people who already have the money, but opportunities for folks that have the bandwidth and the characteristics of entrepreneurs that wish to be entrepreneurs, and simply giving them access. And sometimes that's not even about money. It's about access to other resources.
Or tools or machines that maybe they are expensive that they couldn't afford themselves, but they could share the cost of.
That's correct. It can be machines. It can be access to certain types of knowledge. And when we talk about simple knowledge, right, there are people walking the earth now who have many of the right characteristics for being an entrepreneur, who have advanced degrees and yet don't understand the basics of bookkeeping.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just the real, again, nuts and bolts, the day-to-day of what it means when you own an organization that you've helped to found, and you're not at a point where you have 50 to 100 employees yet. So a lot of decision making and a lot of nuts and bolts work is, it's more highly reliant upon you. And and that leads us into, you know, leadership management styles and techniques and so forth. But yeah, you're 100% spot on. There's very simple things, including, by the way, tools. And I'm sure we'll get more into that as we talk.
And to me, a successful business person knows what they don't know. A successful business person doesn't know everything. They lean on other people to help them.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the first things that we've talked about with would-be business owners or current business owners when we consult them is your first decision is, do you wish to be the craftsman or do you wish to be the business owner? Because I do believe, having come from the arts, that all forms of making a living can be seen pragmatically just as a means to an end, but also you could elevate that performance, if you will, to an art form. And so owning a business, managing a business, leading others can also be seen that way. And you make the choice of doing that. It's a discipline in and of itself. And so it's very hard to do both. There's no right or wrong answer, but people really have to start by asking themselves, do I wish to be the craftsman, the maker, or do I wish to focus on leading the business? And then beyond that, all kinds of the decisions on what they know and don't know, what they wish to do, Mark, and what they do not wish to do. And you have the personal confidence to surround yourself with people, hopefully much better than you at a variety of things, and maybe even including what you are good at. That's building a successful organization.
Yeah, that's what Steve Jobs once said, that he hires smart people and gets out of their way. And to me, that I love working with people who are smarter than me. It really elevates you as well to have people with much bigger brains than you on your team.
One of the great opportunities I had early in my musical career was to work with several peers. They were young enough to be peers and not my elders, and old enough to be much wiser than me, and instilled this concept that's very important for those of us who would be making a living on stage, that you surround yourself with fellow artists that are much better than you, and that's how you're going to grow. If you do not do that, it will cost you any chance of a long-term career. Right. It was really put in those words. And as much as possible, we try to help organizations realize that too.
Yeah.
Because that level of self-awareness and self-confidence in your leadership, I mean, it just speaks to a lot of potential success, long-term success.
Yeah. Self-awareness in life is really important. Being aware of your impact on other people and how you carry yourself and the things you say is really important.
Yeah, and we shouldn't discount, besides that being good for business or good for society, as you're sort of suggesting, if this wasn't fun every once in a while, we wouldn't want to do it, or if it wasn't gratifying. And so, I think a meaningful life, if we go beyond just fun, a meaningful life is not necessarily one where there's an absence of pain, but one where we are, as you've said, we're self-aware and we're really empathic and compassionate and aware of the needs of others, including ourselves. And that kind of attitude or that kind of way of generally presenting yourself in life, it leads to a much more gratifying feeling over time. And I do think it's essential to long-term success. It's also essential to success where by the time a business is at a high level of financial success and is known, you can resist the urge to become a relatively embittered CEO. You know the phenomenon I'm describing?
Yeah.
You get hit in the head a lot of times, but it's taught you to be a better person and you allow yourself to really enjoy the fruits of your labors, Frank.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area that I would love to drill down on. You know, we could make that a series unto itself, I think.
I love it.
I do want to move on, talk about workshop, but first I just want to understand what makes Central Massachusetts special for you. You're a touring musician. Now you're a business person. Why are you in this area?
First and foremost, you know, the writer Wendell Berry talks about that concept of homecoming. And what he means by that is a sense of, regardless of where your travels take you, you know, at some point in time, you come back to the place that bore you, hopefully to instill in that place or take part in the benefit to the people of that place, including yourself. And our economic nomadic lifestyle, as it were, doesn't really speak to that. It's actually made that phenomenon kind of novel. So first and foremost, this is home. My family mostly came to this area either anywhere from 100 to 300 years ago. To this specific area, parts of Worcester County. So I feel a deep sense of obligation to be here. Workshop is, in fact, the first time in 25 years I've had any sort of business to do, if you will, in the immediate Worcester area, which is quite special. I grew up just west of Worcester. And besides that, from a more pragmatic standpoint, Mark, there's just really good bones here, are there not?
Oh, yeah.
For a variety of business. And I particularly like, among other things, I like the opportunity in the greater Worcester area in the areas of transportation. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of trying to create a very diverse and therefore resilient industrial base here, a variety of types of businesses and inserting ourselves in a variety of different parts of those ecosystems, if we want to call them that. In other words, some intellectual property-based business, some manufacturing of various kinds, you know, et cetera. Diversity is just one of the greatest forms of resilience I think you can have in a modern economy. So,
yeah, speaking of resiliency, makers are among the most resilient people, I think, because some of them are throwbacks, right? And I really want to learn more about the workshop. Can you tell me what it's all about and the kinds of companies and people that are located there? And you just moved to Rochdale. Tell me about that too.
Yes, workshop for the first 5 years was a maker space. I'm mostly focused on the hobbyist or the person that's there as an avocation. Although right from the outset in 2016, it did have a lot of entrepreneurs at various levels, okay? It's not what we would have referred to, though, as an industrial or a business incubator, per se. We've had, being SMG, sort of came together with owners Randall and Angela Meraki this fall. We were looking for a different and a better marketplace in which to enact some of our novel programming that we had started to prove out in a different region. And they bought what was the former Worcester Tool and Stamp Company. Magnuson family started more than a century ago in Rochdale, part of Leicester. And they very consciously said, look, we really want to make the leap into a fully fledged industrial business incubator. And the key component for them there, because they had a very well-established vocational training set of classes and programs and whatnot. Now they have the space, they have the equipment, and then some for a variety of industries. And we supplied that final component, which was the type of business and leadership training that would make it credibly an industrial incubator. And the final component that we'll be adding to that, which is somewhat novel, although based in very fundamental real estate premise, is the addition over the next few years of various live-work amenities. So ultimately, this is a play to create a somewhat novel but effective medium to high density mixed-use development, and to hopefully see that be replicable and be a solution for cities and towns and businesses all over the country where that kind of thing would be advantageous.
So almost like an artist studio that is a residence as well.
Yes, except, and certainly the place remains available to hobbyists. Nearly all of the existing membership, though they've been closed largely due to COVID, of course, your types of classes and space that requires you to be there has been difficult during this time period, but they've retained nearly all of their membership. In fact, they've only lost a handful. And when I say that, I mean, you know, less than six members during this time period, because the existing membership really believe in the workshop. But you've now moving into, if you can envision WPI graduates having the capability of not only, you know, starting a business there and having their startup costs be significantly reduced, whether they have federal funding, say through an SBIR or not, but they also have the opportunity to affordably live on campus, which opens up, as an entrepreneur, of course, as you know, it opens up yourself up to more access to the culture that's being created with all the cross-pollination going on. But we also want it to really be an example to cities and towns throughout the region, throughout the United States, rather, that this kind of development is really what's required. It brings together the young and the old. It creates a deeper sense of culture. We talked a little before about this sense of homecoming. We want to retain talent, of course. And the way I think you do that is by looking at creating the right ecosystem for people to really want to live and work in one place. And of course, as you know, it hopefully becomes a solution to a lot of the commercial real estate that's lying dormant because we have deindustrialized for so long.
And you're doing online events at the workshop. Can you share any details of upcoming sessions?
Yes. On the business side in particular, of course, the types of classes, these are mostly classes that we are offering, and those can be done remote. So moving forward, as the pandemic policies change, you can come directly to the workshop for those classes. But in addition, now and moving forward, we'll also have the option of both remote live, and then people can download for a fee for certain courses. And so, you know, we have a bookkeeping for entrepreneurs class, really geared towards the entrepreneur that needs to shore up their knowledge of keeping their own books, and then also just the fundamentals of accounting and so forth in, I think, a unique way as opposed to taking a college course. Those are offered on Monday nights at 7. We have a public speaking and discourse course that takes place Thursday nights at 7. And these are on a rolling basis, Mark. So yep. People can sign up as they wish and get into sort of a cohort and work within a group. We have, and those are taught by a gentleman, a former college professor and an entrepreneur himself in a variety of industries named Paul Crowley. Tamar Russell of Sitka Creations, a very successful design firm and marketing firm in North Central Mass, teaches a number of our digital marketing courses. Those take place on Monday nights at 7. We have an incoming instructor in networking and sales fundamentals. His name is Bruce Chester, a recent Republican candidate for state rep, as it were, and a college professor. And then there's a couple of courses I, in fact, teach, and they are seminar style. The Business of the Blues, which in March takes place on the 17th, and a course on strategies in pivoting, especially in difficult times, and how to preserve your own personal wherewithal and self-awareness. And that takes place on March 24th. And those recur on a monthly basis. Yeah. And are somewhat unique. They're a blend of, particularly Business of the Blues is a blend of business fundamentals coupled with a cultural phenomenon. And I hope to outlay a sort of a series of courses in that vein over the next year.
People can go to the workshop.com to sign up for these.
Workshop.com/classes. You'll see the ongoing roster of classes as we schedule new courses in subsequent quarters and the new brand new courses that are coming up. Because we have probably now at this point about a dozen or so yet to be premiered. Yeah. And that just gets us through 2021. Though there's actually new curricula that we're working on for 2022. So, you know, there's a lot of activity going on. Let's just put it that way.
And the workshop is spelled WORCSHOP.
Yes, we should mention that. And when you do go to the web, it is the workshop. The is important.
The workshop with a C.com. Well, this has been great. When we come back, we'll cover Scott's background in music and then peer into the future. So stay with us. We're talking with Scott Graves, founder of SM Graves Associates. Scott, you have a background in music, and we're here on WICN in Worcester. We're part of the Plus in Jazz Plus. So how did your training in music prepare you for the career you are in now?
For one, my experience in music taught me to walk forward with a deep sense of soulfulness and love. And I don't mean that lightly. I mean to say that anything you do needs to have complete and total dedication and a passion for it, but also to keep a real, you know, frame of mind. Most of my substantive musical career was spent in jazz, which is an improvisational music. And anyone that has studied that for any length of time understands the sort of presence of mind one needs to be able to consistently perform in that vein and to create a dialogue on stage with your fellow members and so forth. And that takes soulfulness, but it also takes skill and a steadfast dedication to learning your craft. I think if there's two words that exemplify that time period that I've tried to take into business, and I try to encourage all people to take into their businesses, one is craftsmanship and the other is stewardship. Craftsmanship and stewardship, I think, are important tenets. If the prime motivations and the prime facets of the way you run a business are not, if they don't live up to the litmus test of those two tenets, then I think it's important to reconsider them. Besides that, you know, there are ways that you, when you're working not only as a performer, but as a writer or an arranger, it has an effect long term if you study and utilize them as a craft. They change the perception, the way you think about certain things. And I think if we talk about business strategy and business planning, having the capability to synthesize different disciplines or different facets of a business plan. In other words, to think ahead about how one component of the business operation has an effect on the other components of the business operation. You know, the mind is, we're not multitaskers, as you probably know. We just think really fast. We can process really fast. Most people are linear thinkers, and it's very difficult to sort of synthesize these things and to think about how one has consequences over the other before you make a decision to move forward on a particular business decision. So in that way, thinking about the plan as a whole and one portion of its consequences on another. You know, I'd like to think I got that largely from writing, arranging, performing, and teaching music.
I want to talk more about the future, where Workshop is going, but I've got you here. So I want to ask you what life was like as a touring musician and some of the highlights and places that you saw along the way.
It was wonderful, particularly since I was young. I was just coming out of my teens when I was doing that kind of work. And I got to see a lot of the country that most people, frankly, won't see. The other thing I should mention, it wasn't very exotic. Typically, this was done by car or van or bus. But you know what that did was you got to see parts of the country. People don't say, we're going to Niagara Falls and let's stop along the way in Rochester and in Utica and you know what I mean? And so, yep. But we did that. We played the small regional theaters and other types of corporate venues and whatnot, and did so through mostly the northern tier of the country, and the southeastern tier was my personal experience.
But seeing the country on the ground, not from an airplane, makes you appreciate it. And makes you appreciate the people and the different kind of cultures that exist on the ground.
Absolutely. I had this very, in my teens, I fell in love with the beat writers, and I had this very Jack Kerouac-esque idea of what it was going to be like. And of course, it was a mix of a little bit of that with less romanticism. And then there were things, you know, like the first time I drove into Flint, Michigan and saw, you know, parking lots for, 10 or 20,000 cars, virtually empty, right? And empty mills and stuff. And then, but getting to meet the people there, talking about their community and their deep sense of pride in their community. And then, you know, this is in the 90s when the deindustrialization that had occurred there was much more, the feeling was much more raw. It's just one example of you know, just dozens of communities that we came through. And I don't, it wasn't all a negative thing, mind you. It was an empowering thing to say, well, you know, if these people can do it, you know, and how are they doing it? And why is this important to me even, right? And it's sort of like sowed the seeds for saying, well, you know, beyond just being a musician or beyond just doing this for a living, what else can we do that would be more substantive to work with or help people like this? Yeah. And that seemed to be a gratifying thing to embark upon someday. You know?
It's a noble kind of cause that you're behind. And I'm interested to see what you think and hope that Workshop will achieve in the years to come.
It's right now, it's about making that full leap substantively into being an industrial makerspace. We have a number of new tenants there, even prior to fully being open due to COVID, you know, some 14 new tenants that are all a variety of sizes. some technology-based, some more grounded in what people might call a craftsmanship-oriented type of business, but a nice healthy mix. We've got some existing relationships we're now enlivening with institutions, including our own local WPI, to create pipelines for graduates and for faculty. Different types, a combination of space and services, the programming that gives them the solutions that they really need that they can't currently get somewhere else. And so the project, which is part space and part programming, really becomes, like you heard me say before, an ecosystem. There's that business interaction there happening between members, between the greater business community on the outside. So for us right now, substantively, that means really doing a lot of work and research and reaching out to people to understand exactly what it is that the holes that we can fill, and being responsive to the marketplace. That's a big part of the project, whether you're talking about the real estate itself or you're talking about how we attract new tenants or new members. You know, are we being really responsive to the needs on the local ground? Because that in and of itself is part of what we're trying to teach other communities to do. You know, the top-down approach doesn't really work, whether you're talking about business, economic development, or urban planning, right? Boy, if we just had a fifth lane on that highway, traffic's going to go away. And then we build the fifth lane, and it takes 10 years. And then there's just as much traffic now on five lanes as there were on four.
Right.
And it's a top-down approach, right? It's part of some centralized federal system that isn't necessarily what probably was the best solution on the ground. It might be a solution somewhere else, but it wasn't the solution for that particular place. Yeah. So, you know, that idea you heard me say earlier of a bottom-up approach, that starts with really understanding what the local ecosystem needs and then simply responding to that, finding a way to produce a solution that actually seems to work for that locality and not worrying about the fact that, you know, it might not work somewhere else.
Right. Well, it will be fun to watch. I really appreciate you joining me on the Venture Forum, Scott. It was a really enjoyable discussion. Thanks so much.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Reed Edwards. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Join us next week as we continue to share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.